Welcome to Fighting for the Underdog, the podcast that follows the tales of compassion and bravery of animal rights activists all over the world. My name is Hannah Grant, and I'm the Administrative Assistant and Social Outreach Director at the Animal Law Firm. I will be taking over as a guest host for our lead attorney and founder, Christina Bergson, in order to create more content for our lovely viewers. As I interviewed these amazing people, I was truly inspired by the common theme of hope that they give to underdogs everywhere. They taught me that sometimes the greatest power an underdog possesses is never giving up hope. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Today we have Kathy McGuire, the president and founder of New Jersey Aid for Animals. NJ Aid for Animals is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation with the motto Advocacy, Action, Impact. Their mission is to provide programs for domestic animals on wellness, humane education, spay and neuter, with a focus on impoverished communities, and they report abuse and pursuing justice for abused animals. Kathy has been an involved member helping fight for animal rights in many important court cases. Thanks for being our guest today, Kathy.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This is so exciting, especially since you have an office now here in the Philadelphia, New Jersey area for animals. We can never have too many lawyers and advocates for the rights of the underdog.
Yes, we're so excited to get involved out there. Well, we can just dive right in then. Would you like to tell us a little bit about New Jersey Aid for Animals and what you do there?
Well, a little bit about us. I started the organization in 2005. I moved here in 2003 and from another state to New Jersey, and saw a need for helping animals when I visited Camden, New Jersey. It's not too far from Philadelphia. And maybe the only thing that separates Philly and Camden is a bridge, a couple of bridges. And so I thought I would start a nonprofit. I had done it for years in another state and had been on several boards and have a degree in marketing. So I thought I could start this nonprofit, and I did, and it took off. And I've been doing it now since 2005. And we have a board, of course, and we have an advisory board, which I always recommend any charity to have an advisory board that, that you can talk to and bounce ideas off of. And the more the merrier for people involved in your mission.
Definitely. What was the purpose of your organization when you got started, and how has it kind of changed over the years?
Well, when I started, it was, that was 20 years ago here. And because I wanted to hit the ground running, I already knew about, rescuing a dog or a cat and, getting it spayed or neutered and finding it a home and doing home inspections and stuff. But I wanted to do more. So I took the animal control officer training class in 2004, and I took the animal cruelty investigator course that same year, so that I knew, especially being from another state, I knew what the state laws were, state statutes, and violations of those statutes in New Jersey. I also wanted to know what the role was of, of SPCA, and what the role of the animal control officer was. So I took those courses and got certified and layered it with my nonprofit experience, my marketing degree, and my love of animals. And that way I was able to, as things came up through the years, I was able to define what cruelty was because I'd been trained in it, and able to guide, navigate people, which is what I've done now for a very long time, navigating people that call and want to know what they should do because there is no SPCA anymore. So the New Jersey SPCA was disbanded a few years ago. And so it's a whole different animal now. And
yeah, for sure.
So it's kind of morphed into doing a lot of the reporting cruelty or telling people who to call, because when the SPCA left, the 565 municipalities all then had to make their officers a humane law enforcement officer, with the 21 counties in New Jersey ultimately responsible for, the making sure that these cruelty cases were prosecuted. So that's kind of how it's changed over the years. In the beginning, we were getting dozens and dozens of dogs and cats and pulling them, and just, Camden, and as I said in the beginning, getting them homes and vetting them and everything. But there's so many organizations that do that now, and it's impossible to do all that work and then still be involved in a cruelty or going to court or putting a case together for somebody, or even keeping up on legislation, which we're trying to do as well. We've dabbled in that the last couple of years, following all the laws in the state. And so it's a lot of work, and still, as all volunteers, maintain your infrastructure, maintain all the reports that need to be done, and your books, and everything that your 990s that have to be done to make sure that you are compliant with what the state and the IRS needs. So,
Okay, yeah, that
yeah.
sounds great. How do you feel you make a difference in your industry today, and what is your role in your organization?
Well, I'm the president and the founder, so I came up with this idea to call it New Jersey Aid for Animals. I purposely made it for the whole state, so I didn't confine myself to one area like, Camden Aid for Animals, so that it could be all encompassing. And I also, if you notice, my logo is red, and I made it that way because means stop, a red sign. And I think that we want to get the attention of, a sense of urgency when people call us. So I, like recently, I've had lots of cruelty that we've been involved in, with dog fighting cases. And recently somebody called me about a dog that was jumping over the neighbor's fence into this person's yard, and the dog was on a rope. So
Oh,
the
wow.
dog would get itself over but not be able to get itself back, and on a rope. And we were, from the pictures I saw, for sure it was going to hang itself. So, the person had already called several people and wasn't getting any action. So I just jumped right to the prosecutor's office and called the prosecutor, and they got somebody on it. And I'm able to, because I've cultivated these relationships in the last 20 years, with police and with prosecutors. I mean, they pretty much know who they are, and if they don't, they soon learn. But because I call and call and call and call until I go up the food chain. And sometimes I'm lucky to get somebody that will respond, and if I don't, then I just keep going up. We try to follow the protocol first. Our animal control officers don't really have the authority to write summons for violations of Title IV. That's the humane law enforcement officer's job. So, if there's a dog at large, or that's really just a violation of an ordinance. But we'll certainly, try to help in any way that we can. I think more than anything, we really are a clearinghouse of information. When people call us, how do I do this? Where do I find this? When can I? And we try to answer every single question. We answer all phone calls. We answer all emails. Maybe it's not the email that you want to get. Like, I've got 40 feral cats. Can you take them? No. But we have a way for you to trap them and get traps and to get them all fixed, and to help you work around what your problem is. And I do think that that's very valuable, for somebody to call. Like the lady that was calling with the dog gonna hang itself, she said, "Boy, I've called so many people, and nobody's done anything." And I said to her, "Well, that's why you called us." So we are pretty well known for, if you want it done, call us, because we're very tenacious, and we are very adamant on getting things done that haven't, that didn't get done either properly or being ignored. So I think that's valuable. people.
Yeah, that was my next question, was in what situations or at what point should people call you versus another organization?
Oh, well, I think any, as I said, the more the merrier. I mean, if you can get people, I do it a little bit differently. Unless I really have to use social media to bombard a police department with, with calls and letters and emails and things, I'd rather just make a an ally of that person. Like a lieutenant that I had to call the other day, I would rather do it that way, because then when I call again, they'll find me, legitimate, and that I do try to do that. I try to get as much as I can about the situation and the person to whom I'm calling, give it to them on a silver platter. Here's the address, here's the location. I was able to get a picture. The person who's calling me, the complainant, is sent me a video. Let me send you this. Here's all the information I can get, so that that person looking into the cruelty has everything they need, and it's a a legitimate call. So, but I mean, if other people, I'm not sure, because as I said, the SPCA is gone. I know that that Dr. Goldman, who you interviewed from Animal Cruelty Enforcement Services, he's been my mentor for a long time, and he's like the expert in the state for convictions and violations of Title IV. But I mean, anybody can, I mean, because I took the course, and I've been doing it for a really long time now. I think he and I'm pretty sure, I might be wrong on this, are the only private citizens in the state of New Jersey that have gotten conviction on another private citizen without SPCA law enforcement or police. We just we got our probable cause together, and then we took it to the municipal court. My case was a municipal court, and the they docketed it, said okay, and then the prosecutor took it over, and I was able to do that when either I felt that at that time the SPCA wasn't doing what they were supposed to be doing, which is I think one of the reasons they're gone. So that was, something that I'm comfortable with and familiar with. And I mean, but if anybody else can do it, it's certainly, I feel that it's valuable, and people do finally get around to calling us. And I say, I w always wish you would have called us first, but somehow they get around to calling us, and we take care of it. So, and if we can't, then we find somebody that can.
Well, that's very impressive. I really admire all the work you guys do there. Is there anything you're currently working on, any cases that you'd like to share or want people to know about?
Well, the two that I just told you, there was another gentleman, we just this last week, that we always follow up. We don't just make a call and then say, oh, okay. We usually ask if they'll call us back. Law enforcement, let us call us back, and tell them that the guy on the rope, he was told to get a proper tether, a proper tethering with a swivel at the end. It has to be a certain length here in New Jersey. So, and then there was another fellow, just like we got, that he was had shock collars on his Dalmatians, his two Dalmatian puppies, and was tormenting him from the house. We saw pictures of the Dalmatians out in the yard with the person, whoever control was just, randomly shocking these dogs. So we sent the prosecutor out to look at that situation, because that is considered a violation, tormenting a dog. So, things like that. That was very recent. But we're always have our eye out on legislation. There's a bill last year that had been introduced previously, and we were able to, get the legislators to not pass it. We're hoping it doesn't come back. I'm not even going to say the name of it. So we do keep an eye on legislation for anything or about animals, and we like to then send out alerts to some abandoned animal bloggers to let people know who they can call, or they can call their legislator, their assembly or their Senate people here. And that's kind of a full-time job to be watching LegiScan and all the bills in New Jersey about animals. So
Yeah, definitely.
right now, that's pretty much what we're doing. We get a lot of calls about animals with improper shelter. So we will refer them to call their animal control, and then if they don't get any relief from that, we walk them step by step, because we are trying to. In the beginning, I would, 20 years ago, I would just say, I'll make all the calls. But now I try to tell the person who's calling, here's who you need to call, here's what you need to do: get their badge number, get the operator number, put down the time, memorialize everybody you talk to, make your list, so that if you have to go back and somebody says, well, nobody called, you could say, well, here's who I talked to, here was their operator dispatch number. And some people don't want to do that. They just want you to take the burden off of them, and they make the phone call and think, okay, now it's done. And we're trying to, educate people so that they can do it if the situation comes up again. But we find that either A, they don't want to because it's a neighbor, they're afraid of repercussions, or B, they don't feel comfortable calling and talking to the police, even if they remain anonymous. I've had quite a few instances where I've said, here's what you need to do. Here's plan A, plan B, do this, do that. Then I talk to them a day later and say, did you do any of that? And the person said, no, I don't. Even with the dog on the rope, that dog gets loose a lot. I mean, the dog is at large a lot when the dog is not on the rope, which is. So I told the person who called me, you need to go down and file dog at large. That's a violation of an ordinance. And it's so easy to do. I mean, you just, walk them. And, 3 days in a row, I chased this person because I said, I'm taking care of the cruelty end of the tether. At least you can now throw something more at him and take better care of his dog. And so she said, no, I'm not going to do it. I was going to do it, but now I'm not. I might as well not. Nothing's going to happen. And it's that defeatist attitude. It's like, wait, I've done all the work. You're the one complaining and you're the neighbor. So, I mean, although I appreciate you letting me know about this dog, I still feel that if you're in for a penny, in for a pound, if you're the one complaining, you should get in your car, go down and file that easy complaint about the dog at large. I've done it. I've done it with people whose dogs that I see constantly running in the street or whatever, because I just feel that I would feel terrible if I hit that dog and I killed it. I would never forgive myself. So we always encourage, everybody's dog, I guess, gets out once in a while, but four, five, six, seven times, there's, fix the hole in your fence or bring your dog in.
It definitely seems like people are intimidated by the steps, but it's really not that hard to take action. Is there anything you're doing to try to make people more aware of all the things they can do, or is it kind of a case by case basis?
There's no set protocol, but I mean, I always, advise people and counsel them to, again, like I said, memorialize everything, get pictures, call your animal control first and go through those steps. And and then, if you don't get what you need, then call the police, ask to speak to your animal control, or you're a humane law enforcement officer. Like the other day when I called, and the humane law enforcement was out, it was a Monday, and they were out till Wednesday, and it was cold here. And I said, well, that's not going to work. So I said, just let me speak to the give me the captain's office. So, and all the humane law enforcement officers here are police officers. In fact, most of them are detectives. So I got the captain's office and ended up talking to a lieutenant there who ended up resolving the situation. So, but that takes a little bit of, not nerve, but it takes a lot of self-confidence of, okay, well, somebody just says, well, he's not here till Wednesday. Okay, leave a message. Well, then you prompt and say, sorry, that won't work. because it's a circumstance now that this animal needs help now, not Wednesday. And so I think to have that little bit of, call it self-confidence, experience, whatever, to go that extra step, thank you very much, but please transfer me. And I think that that's what we try to impart on people who are wanting to know where to find information. I do find that people just they want to take it off of their burden and give it to you.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
How large is your team then? And would you be willing to take like interns or volunteers for your organization?
oh yeah, we have people that have been with us for a very long time, almost since we started. We started in 2005, so November 2005 or six, I think it was. But we've had our board. We have a very wonderful board. Well, Jim is on our board, the fellow that you interviewed, Jim Crosby. So we're lucky to have him. And then we have a veterinarian on board, our board, and then we have a wonderful attorney who she's the attorney that got the Michael Vick dogs to Best Friends. So, and she's on our board, and then my husband and myself. And then we have an advisory board that we, again, as I said, I always suggest an advisory board because they don't really have voting power, but they're people who you can bounce things off of. And maybe that person is really good. Like we have an advisory board person who's a excellent, has excellent writing skills, and she's an engineer. And I like to bounce things off of her. If it's an appeal, an ask letter, or a grant or something that I'm looking for, that she can just look at it. Sometimes it's good to have another pair of eyes, especially when you're writing a letter and asking for lots of money.
For sure.
And we have another advisory board member who does our social media, and she's been with us a very long time. And it's so funny how she found us. We were having a big event, and we had signs. It was at somebody's home. We had signs all over the neighborhood about this event, identify the home. And this person who's still with us, our social media expert, she drove by the sign, but it was after the party. So she drove by and found us that way. She was a day late and a dollar short, but now she's been with us almost 20 years. So
Wow,
yeah.
yeah.
And we have a PR person. We have somebody who is has been an excellent foster with us for a very, very long time. She's fostered a lot of our smaller dogs that we used to take all the time from Camden. And we have volunteers that have been with us a very long time. We have a paralegal who does watches the legiscan for us and watches those pesky bills and legislation. And we have an excellent part-time bookkeeper, and because we think it's important to have somebody that's not affiliated with the organization for transparency and compliance to be looking at your money and your books, because a lot of what you're doing in this industry is cash. And I think it's important that your statements are reconciled each month from the bank, and that you are having your books looked at by a CPA. So we also have a CPA. I have a private investigator on retainer, and I also have a nonprofit attorney expert on retainer for when I have questions. So that pretty much rounds out everybody.
Well, that sounds great. So, how is the best way for people to get involved and for the public to support you as well?
Well, I think you can, and we do a lot of things virtually now. I think as you know, with the advent of the COVID and everything, we started. I mean, a lot of this could be done, as I said. A lot of my things are phone calls with law enforcement, phone call. I'm on the phone a lot, and So I think people can just go to NewJerseyAidForAnimals.org, NJAFA.org. They can go to our Facebook. They can, support us with donations because we are certainly not government funded. And so we are always looking for volunteers and people who might, not so much in fostering, but event planning. We do a big event every year called Bikers for Bullies. And we just finished our ninth one, and next year will be our 10th year of doing it's a big motorcycle run for pit bulls to help abused and abandoned pit bulls.
Awesome.
And so we put lots of people together with lawyers that that need to fight for the underdog, like your wonderful lawyer. And
Yes, love
so we're
Christina.
always trying to connect people. And I think that we need people that really want to delve into it and to teach them what I know. And so we're always looking for people to stuff an envelope or come over and see what our little we're a log cabin on 5 acres in South Jersey that we bought actually from a bunch of dog fighters back in 2004 that had been running a dog fighting ring out of this house where I live. It was actually, according to the SPCA, when everything got seized in here, we ended up buying it. It was probably the second largest dog fighting headquarters in the area on the East Coast. So
Oh,
it was
wow.
a pretty gruesome place to find out about, but they ended up selling the house, and we purchased it and then turned it into New Jersey Aid for Animals. So, but it's quite a history here, and it's a nice place now because we really do support the pit bulls. I would say more than anything now, our program services are to spay and neuter pit bulls and to spay and neuter feral cats because those are the two animals that are being put to sleep most at all the shelters is the pit bulls and the feral cats. We hosted 25 pit bulls and in Philly last year to get spayed and neutered at the low cost clinic there. And we finished, I think, 30. We did 30 feral cats for caregivers this past year. And we want to do more, next year to really, really focus on getting these pit bulls fixed and the feral cats. Yeah, we don't do a lot of owned animals anymore because we found that, people were calling and like, oh, can you give my dog a dental? Or my dog got, needs a new hip replacement. Oh, there's just no way we would have funds and then have money left for abused and abandoned animals.
Yeah. It gets to be overwhelming for sure. Well, I'm glad that
Yes.
you shared your contact info, and hopefully people can contact you and get involved, and you'll have a even bigger team.
Well, let me give you my email address too. It's just
Yes, that would be amazing.
Kathy, Kathy dot M, like Maguire, at NJAFA.org. Kathy dot M at NJAFA.org. And they can always, give us a phone call or a text.
Yes, for sure. And I will add that information in the description as well, so it's easy
Thank
to
you.
access. Yeah, of course. Well, we can take a little break here and we will come back and talk some more about your organization and your experience if that works for you.
Yeah, great.
Okay, thank you so much. Hi everyone, we're back with Kathy McGuire. Hi everyone, we're back with Kathy McGuire, the president and founder of New Jersey Aid for Animals. So I wanted to start talking about some cases you've been working on in the past year and hope that you could give us some details about those.
Yeah, we've had a, it's been really, what a year. I mean, we just, we worked with two really interesting cases, but they were very sad, but they can't and they got good endings, and both were about matted dogs. Matted dogs are a violation of Title IV for keeping a dog that is severely matted. So when we try to tell vets that too, that if a dog comes in, even the groomers, I mean, when you see a dog that is so matted, one of the that is cruelty. We had I wish we could show this picture, but we had a dog that somebody called us about. It was another rescue, and we do try to collaborate with, with other rescues or with, with shelters to be to try to help when we can. But we got a dog. We got a call from another rescue in New York that they had gotten a call from somebody, because we're in South Jersey, so we're quite a ways up in their area, but it was still New Jersey, which is very close. It hadn't been groomed in 3 years, this dog.
Oh my
It
goodness.
looked, when they sent me the picture, it looked like a rug. It did look like, we thought it was a rug. I said, there's no way there's a dog. So the person who found the dog had no car and no money. So we, it was a Sunday, I remember, and we sent one of our board members who's up in North Jersey to go pick the dog up and the finder of the dog and drive it to an emergency vet. And they, oh my God, the dog was there for 2 days. They had to shave the dog down, obviously, and he had little like skin lesions from where where the hair was growing into his skin, and you just wouldn't believe this dog that was just so severely matted. But it ended up, the dog ended up going back to the person who found it, and then the rescue in New York took over from there and got the dog, situated as far as follow-up vet appointments and everything like that. So that was a really good case for that little dog.
Yeah, I'm so
And
glad.
then there was, oh, it was, I've never seen a dog like that in of doing rescue for 30 years. I've seen some pretty badly matted, but nothing that looked like just a rug. It had no head, no tail. You couldn't see the paws. So, but
My gosh.
that was a really good ending. And then we had another one, this little dog, somebody in Camden called us, and I drove to Camden, New Jersey, and they said that they had found the dog. Now, this was a little bit different because the dog, again, hadn't been groomed for some time. It wasn't as bad as the other dog, but what had happened, this dog's nail had grown into its pad, and as it grew into the pad, and the dog was matted, but its paw was so infected because the owner put a plastic, put a rag over the paw and then a plastic bag and duct taped it shut.
Oh my gosh.
So it was very infected. So when I picked the dog up and took it right to the vet, we thought we were going to have to amputate his leg. But we ended up not having to amputate, and we, putting the dog in the crate that night, and had him, he was barking and barking and barking. And I called the finder and said, oh boy, he barks a lot. I said, how long did have you had him? And she said, oh, I just found him yesterday. She had told me that originally she found him. And then I said, oh, did he bark like this when you had him? And she said, yes, he did. And I said, oh, how did you get him to stop barking? And she said, oh, I don't know. What I did, and I walked her through. She kind of dimed herself because it was her dog. So by the time I asked her, a series of questions, it was obvious. And then she finally admitted, yeah, it was her dog, but she didn't want to say that it was her dog. She was afraid she'd get in trouble. And but anyway, so that's the kind of sleuthing that we do because we wanted to find out as much as we could to move forward to try to find the dog a home. But little Izzy is a little Shih Tzu. So little Izzy, his foster, not the foster that we normally use, but I found a new foster and she ended up adopting him. So he's in a wonderful home and he's blossomed into a wonderful little boy and he's just so loved. So that was another case that, getting him all healthy again and everything. So we, those were a couple cases. We don't normally step out of our lane in our tri-state area, New Jersey, Philly. But we did help a dog in the Kentucky floods. Remember the Eastern Kentucky flooded in July of this year? And I do like to, when these things pop up on my feed, I see these smaller rescues. They're not these monolithic behemoths, that have all this money, and I won't say their names. We all know who they are, the big guns, in the industry, all make huge salaries and get tons of money.
And this small volunteer group, they got this dog through the flood, and this little dog, Leia, needed her leg amputated, and she needed to be spayed. And of course, it was a lot cheaper down there, and so we raised money for this dog in Eastern Kentucky to have her leg amputated and be spayed. And we just recently learned that that she did well during the surgery, and she was adopted into a very, very loving home down there in Kentucky. And we just felt so good about that. Again, we don't normally step out of our lane, but we just really admired what the small rescue was trying to do.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a really some really good stories. You know, we happened to be at the right place at the right time. We were in a one of our shelters. I think it was over the springtime, and some guy called and wanted to rehome his tarantula. And we don't really do arachnids, but we happen to know somebody that took tarantulas. So the owner was just going to let it go. We said, absolutely not. So the tarantula got a really good home. And his little hairy fellow who's really thriving. And,
Yeah,
you know,
so
people call us about
worst case,
turtles.
just ask, of course.
Worse, yeah, just ask. I mean, the shelter certainly couldn't take the tarantula, but I happened to be standing in that shelter when I heard the person on the phone say, "No, we don't take tarantulas." And I said, "Oh, give him my number. I know somebody that would take that tarantula." So again, the right place, right time, and a clearinghouse of info. You know, turtles, we get a lot of calls about turtles. We've made a connection with the Stockton College Turtle Rehab here, which isn't too far, and you know, we get calls about critters with wings, claws, hooves, snouts, feathers. It doesn't matter. This poor turtle, we think a raccoon had chewed its front feet off.
Oh
So
no, oh my gosh.
yeah, so we got this turtle, and you know, somebody called us and said, "I don't know what's wrong with this turtle," but and we got that turtle, you know, to a place, and it won't have to worry about its back legs being chewed off now. And then we found a couple baby raccoons on our property and got them down to our wildlife rescue place that we partner with. So every, you know, there's a if whatever we find, we call that person. We call because we really don't do wildlife, and we don't do other than, you know, domestic, and we don't do like rabbits, but we can call the rabbit people who might know another rabbit person. So
Yes, all about connections.
it is all, isn't it? It's all about connections. And I said, I've been doing this 20 years, and I've cultivated a lot of connections and solicited, you know, partnerships, and made been very lucky to have met the people that I've met. And just really by networking, there was a dog that was on death row at our local shelter, and we started a pledge campaign to kick off $250 to go to boarding to be trained. This dog was very salvageable, and that dog was just a darling dog. But he, you know, training is a lot of money, especially board and train. And he did end up going to a trainer who I've spoken to recently, and that dog also found a wonderful home. So those are just some of the highlights. I mean, we really are we try to educate people too that about you know, having some kind of see your lawyer for having a plan for your animals. We get a lot of phone calls about, "Can you take my dog? My sister died, or my mother died. Nobody made any arrangements." So we really, yeah, really, really stress. If you think your family's going to take your pet, you better ask them, because usually you just think they are, and they're not. Nothing's in writing, and as you know, animals are property. And when the when you pass away, unless they're designated in your will, they go to the shelter because they become part of your estate. Animal control has to take your pet. And that happened to us last year, January of this time. A really good friend of ours died, and we didn't know that she had left her four very unsocialized cats and her 14-year-old dog to my organization.
Oh my
So we
goodness.
were kind of surprised on New Year's Day
Oh
when
no, bad
we
timing.
kind of, yeah, when she ended up in the hospital, and then we did, she did end up passing, and we, it took a long time. It took us a good 2 months to get everything situated in homes for the cats. Everybody's been, everybody's good. Nobody had to go to a shelter, but get your plans in order. We tell people that all the time. Go call Christina. Call Christina and get your will done for your pets, for your pet trust. And we're telling people this year, make it this year to get a plan together for your beloved animals. So that's important too, is education. We do feel that, educating people about not only cruelty, but how to take care of your pets.
Yeah,
Because you
that's
never
definitely
know.
a big
Yeah.
challenge, yeah.
Right.
What do you think is one of the biggest challenges for fighting for animal rights today?
Well, especially in New Jersey, because the I said the law enforcement, our humane law enforcement officers are still, there's still some of them that haven't even been trained through the police training academy, I think the PTA, yeah. So there's some that still haven't been trained. With the SPCA gone, there it did leave a bit of a hole. And I think that's still a challenge. I think that some of the officers in the police departments that all of a sudden had to become the humane law enforcement officers, some of them didn't want to be, some of them did, some of them didn't. The animal control didn't like having their animal cruelty investigator titles stripped from their jobs. So it has been a little bit of a challenge, and I think that we're very happy. I'm very happy that real police are in charge of the cruelty and not the SPCA, because they weren't really police officers. They were volunteers doing. So I think that's a still people who are not getting their animals spayed and neutered. I think that's education stink is everything is spay neuter, but I still think it's a message that we're not getting out to the public, and that and now there's not enough vets, and it's so expensive, and there's not enough low cost clinics, and I think that is a challenge for people to get their animals. So that's another thing that we try to do, is to steer them to the places that we know in New Jersey and Pennsylvania or Philadelphia that are low cost spay neuter, so that you do get your animal fixed.
For sure.
So I think that is a challenge with because as far as cruelty, I went after a guy that had he was still breeding his 14-year-old Chihuahua. This 14-year-old Chihuahua had dozens and dozens and dozens of litters,
Oh my
because
goodness.
unlike humans, a dog can still get pregnant at a very advanced age. So he was selling the dogs, and which is illegal. It's called distribution. And so I filed charges against him, and he had to end up, the judge kept saying, "What do you want? What do you want?" I said, "I want the dog fixed so that she can't have any, and I'll pay for it." So because after a while, breeding and breeding and breeding, it is cruelty. I mean, she must have had, a litter a year at 15 years old. So she was very, very abused in our opinion. So I think it's getting law enforcement but there's so many other challenges that law enforcement has, especially in these cities that like Philly, or like Camden, or like the cities where there's a lot of crime. These officers are trying to, take care of the crime, and the animals kind of come in last place. So it's getting them to say, "Hey, these are sentient beings," and which is why we like to give it to them on a silver platter, so that they don't have to reinvent the wheel. And so that's a challenge, getting more people to get involved in this aspect of it. I mean, it's, you know, to get a little dog, get it spayed and neutered, get it home, get it, you know, that's hard too. But the cruelty end of it is can be very daunting. And you keep showing up at court and showing up at court, and nothing happens, and or they get a slap on the wrist, and you know, then all the time that you've taken, it's like, geez, no wonder people don't do it. I had a friend that saw cruelty, and she, we walked her through, you know, through the process, and first she went to court, and the person was a FTA failure to appear. And another failure to appear, and then they finally showed up, and you know, they got nothing. I mean, it was, you know, it was like, wow, you know, it's just like, wow, okay, I've followed everything you did, I'm a private citizen, and all that person got was like, you know, an ordinance violation or something. So it's daunting, and you take your time to show up, and like I did with that Chihuahua with all the litters, I must have gone to Camden Court probably six or seven times, and he was always the breeder was always a failure to appear. And
Gosh, that's so frustrating.
yeah, it can be daunting. And then you just like, well, I'm not doing that again. So I think that that's probably everybody, you know, faces those same challenges. So, but we got to keep up the fight, as you know, for the underdog.
Yes, definitely. On that kind of note of the challenges of education and training, what is one common misunderstanding that you've noticed within the organization or the industry overall?
Well, I still have to go back to spay and neuter. I think that we don't say enough, that we don't, you know, somebody called me the other day and said, oh, I can't keep my dog for a week. I have to, I forget what it was, a community service or whatever it was. And I said, well, where did you get the dog? And they said, oh, we bought it from a breeder. And I said,
Oh,
okay, so if you bought it from a breeder, you must have the money to go put it in a boarding facility. I mean, we're not, you know, really a boarding facility. And then I said, is your dog fixed? Is your dog spayed? And I go through a litany of questions when people call us. I mean, we don't just say, oh yeah, okay. I mean, I want to know the history of the, I want to know what the plans are for the dog. What do you, the pet? And this person said, well, when I get my dog back, wherever it's going to stay for this length of time, I'm going to breed her. I just, it's like, okay, I don't think that's what you want to do. So now it's a whole now conversation about like, why would you do that? Why would you keep, you know, keep doing that? Keep adding. It was a pit bull.
Of course,
Keep
yeah,
adding
so frustrating.
to the problem of over, you know, of all these pit bulls being put to sleep every year. So I, you know, I do think that it's the, because then all these animals inundating the shelters, it just puts a burden on the community. It puts a burden on, you know, on the shelters. And I think that that is a common misunderstanding that I think we need to address more, is the spay neuter issue. Bob Barker said it for 50 years, but apparently it's still not getting to the people that need to get to it. But again, that's a problem. There's not enough places now. The people can go. It's so expensive. The veterinarians are few or far between. So if people can't afford, you know, $400 or $500 to get their dog fixed, we really want to, you know, try to show them where they can go do that. So that, you know, you're creating a call to action. So you want that call to action to spay and neuter. Okay, I'm ready for that call to action. Now, what do I do? So if you're putting out a call to action, you have to have a solution for that call to action. You know, like when you say, well, call your legislator, tell them that you don't want the bear hunt here in New Jersey. So you have to provide all the phone numbers for call your legislator, because the people aren't going to do it. They want that. They want to tell you you to tell them who to call. So I think that that's always a problem too. So
Making sure all the information is there is, yeah,
yeah,
definitely helpful in
give it to
getting
them on a
people to take charge.
silver platter, so they don't have any excuse not to do it. So
Exactly.
but I would like to see more people, and younger people coming to the animal industry, rescue world, and get involved, and whether it's whether you're volunteering for animals or any other charity or any other industry of whatever it be, I would say encourage people to get involved somehow and volunteer your time to something, whatever is your passion, because it really does make a difference in your life, and it really does, I think, make you feel good about the outcomes. And there were some sad outcomes, this year with some animals, but in the end, I think it's the ones that you were able to save, or get saved, through your contacts or whatever way it was.
Definitely. Well, I think that's great advice. I mean, that's why I got involved. So I'm really glad that you said that. But kind of wrapping up a bit, what are the biggest things you're looking forward to in your career and in the future?
Oh, next year, well, every year brings something different, and we never know. I mean, had somebody told me last year at this time, I had a dog that we had pulled from Philly last August, 2021 in August, and nobody wanted her. She was just a little pocket pit, and nobody in the world, no rescue stepped up for her. And we, as I said, we don't normally, we're taken in a lot now and to do that, but she was in such bad shape, and I had a little extra room, and I thought, I'm going to get her all back and get her home. And she's this cute little thing, and
Aww.
she we had her, as I said, last year at this time she was alive. And then January 1st hit, and I told you this, one of our donors and friends died unexpectedly and left all those animals. And then February we had to euthanize the little dog that I got from Philly because
Oh,
she developed cancer.
no.
And there were some other sad things. And as I said, oh my God, if somebody would have told me on December 20th of last year, of 2021, had we done all this beginning January 1st of 2022 to now, I would have said no. No way, Peppa would be dead. Our friend wouldn't be dead. The little cat, the dogs, and you just can't predict. And
No.
I hope it's going to be another good year for us, of sustaining our organization, sustainability and developing more donors and more volunteers and more good stories that we can put in our holiday newsletter at the end, and keep educating people. But we just never know from day to day. We never know what the next day will bring, because these animals don't know it's Christmas, or they don't know that it's a holiday, or they don't know. So we work 24/7. We will always we work every day. If a call comes in, we will answer the phone, we will return a call. So we just hope that it'll be a good year, and that we can continue what we've been doing with our mission of advocacy, action, and impact, because our advocacy is just really, I mean, that's huge advocates through our action
Yes. Well, I
on
hope
having
so
impact.
too.
And those three words.
I hope so too. I really admire all the work that you do,
Go
and
ahead.
this field truly is a, it's just a compassion field. You have to accept there's no days off in animal work, so I think it's really admirable.
That's right. Thank you. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity. And we good luck with your career. If you can come work out here.
Possibly, who knows? You never know what the future holds. So yeah, I really appreciate you joining
That's
me
right,
today,
Ira.
and I think hopefully this will reach some new people and get more people involved, and yeah, I think it, I really thank you for joining my show today.
Thank you, Hannah. Good luck to you too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.
Such an inspiring interview. I learned so much, and I hope you did too. If you were moved as much as I was and want to support this amazing organization, please visit our website at theanimallawfirm.com and check out our merch page, as all profits from merchandise go towards supporting the guests on the show. Or follow the links to donate to this organization directly. If you want to support the podcast, please share us on social media and give us a 5-star review. Anything helps. Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time, fellow underdogs.